Hello and welcome to episode 47 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and I'm today joined by George Reef, one of our copywriters and content leads at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Radix's creative director, David McGuire.
Greetings and salutations.
If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us via podcast at radix-communications.com, or you can tweet us at radixcom.
Sorry, what was that email address again, Emily?
Podcast at radix-communications.com.
And the Twitter?
Radixcom.
RADIXCOM.
Yep.
Cool.
In this episode, we are discussing writing for chatbots and virtual assistants. From little bits of bot script running in Facebook Messenger to Microsoft's Cortana, chatbots and virtual assistants are cropping up everywhere. But beyond the code that makes them function, there are writing requirements that need to be met so that people can and will use them. So George, just what is the difference between a chatbot and a virtual assistant?
That's a very good question. The way I see it, and I'm sure there will be some very smart people who've worked on chatbots and virtual assistants who may disagree with me on this one, but generally the way I see it is that a chatbot is any type of application that responds to or with natural language. So that can range for anything from like a little bot on Twitter or Reddit that will like, you know, come in and correct you if you're like misusing there. Or it might be something more complex that you talk to in like a messenger window to like, I don't know, order pizza or something like that. Whereas a virtual assistant is kind of like a very advanced form of chatbot that you get on like, you know, I don't know, your phone or your computer in the likes of say Siri or Cortana that, you know, integrates with a lot of productivity apps to like, you know, give you a calendar and weather updates and, I don't know, in the case of Alexa, beat you on rock, paper, scissors, however many times I've lost to it. but yeah, so I see them as kind of very similar, but the virtual assistant is a much more advanced form of the chatbot.
So is Alexa an it or a her?
Oh, that is a very good question. All I know is that it's a demon that cannot be beaten at rock, paper, scissors. I mean, you'd think that would be like you'd have a 1 in 3 chance of winning that every time, but apparently not. And you can tell I'm clearly using Alexa in very much the wrong way, because that's most of what I've got from it so far.
Does she play rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock? Or is that beyond her capabilities?
I can barely beat the non-lizard Spock version against her, so I don't dare try and ask.
Can ask for Earl Grey tea hot and she will unfortunately inform you that it's not available in the replicator.
Easter eggs are the best thing. I've had Alexa protesting that she didn't kill my father, and I should stop saying that. All I did was tell her my name was Inigo Montoya. I think are Easter eggs. We should probably say that George isn't here randomly. No. Nice as it is to have George here. George is our champion for kind of AI copywriting here at Radix, because we can see that it's something where there are a lot of bots that are going to need a lot of stuff writing for them, and George is our champion and our leader in that area, which is why he's joined us. So we haven't just randomly brought him. George, come in here and tell us what you think the difference is between a bot and a virtual assistant.
You never
assistant.
Know. You might just value my clearly ill-informed opinion about things. It could happen.
You just lassoed him as he was walking past.
Even a text-based chatbot, which is the kind of thing that people are seeing in sort of like running in scripts on the back end of like Messenger or even Twitter and DM. At the moment, although it's capable, like you can there's lots of instructions around on how to do it, but you can code up like a simple Python based chatbot that has like a series of set responses that link to like a list, little database list of other responses, and then as you ask it questions or talk to it, it slowly incorporates your answers in its database, and it can get really weird. And last year I made a bot using that. I mean, I know George has done something similar, but it was a copywriting bot. But my bot ended up sassing my boyfriend.
Good.
To talk to it. And it hadn't even been programmed to sass, but it ended up sassing
too well from how you talked to
it. Is that deep learning?
No, that was just a simple case of it slowly sort of like evolving its responses in relation to what he had been asking it.
Did he deserve it?
I'm not sure at the time if he deserved that level of abuse from a chatbot. But, you know,
I was quite interested because, you know, we were talking about sort of, you know, Easter eggs and, you know, it's always the thing, you know, when you get, you know, Siri and you get Siri to go boots and cats and all of this, have all these Easter eggs. Are these things that are just fun and are just the developers having a laugh and seeing how many geeky references they can get in? Or is there more to it than that?
Is there a bigger reason why we should treat them as an increasing concern and be worried about them or care about them?
I think actually it's a very good question. And I think the funny thing is, for instance, like when I first was playing around with Alexa, I found one of my initial things I had a problem with was the fact that I didn't find as many fun Easter eggs, say, as when I played around with Cortana. And I think in a way, actually, these things can have a very big impact on the way a chatbot is received. Because I think for a lot of people, chatbots are, you know, a very new type of thing to interact with. And I think it's kind of weird, you know, you're talking to an inanimate object or your phone or whatever in a way you don't normally, and it's odd. And I think by having these Easter eggs that people want to explore because they're amusing or fun or a cool callback or whatever, it gets them used to that mode of speaking to a chatbot or a virtual assistant. And I think then they get more comfortable with it, they're more likely to use it in future for, you know, organizing their day or ordering pizza or being sassed or whatever the chatbot's going to be doing. So I think they have a very important purpose in a strange roundabout way.
So as writers, it's, you know, it's good for us to spend time writing jokes for chatbots to say.
Absolutely. I would 100% say that. It's actually, I'm sure we'll come to this in another question, but I think putting a bit of fun into chatbots is an extremely important part of writing one that's engaging and is going to be used.
Although by the sound of it, Emily's somewhat concerned by them. Should we be? Also, you know, is there Skynet on its way?
Is Skynet on its way? What, from Easter eggs?
The Matrix.
First off, it starts with a Matrix reference, and then we're full on Terminator.
Yeah. You know, get that acceptance. Are they trying to get our trust?
I honestly, you know, I it's an amusing question to consider. But the thing is, I think it's something that plays into a general misunderstanding with chatbots and AI, in that, like, if they are evil and this is going to go full Skynet, like, they're in such early days, it's going to be a really long time. Like, I think really people are not used to talking to them at all. And I think getting that acceptance isn't some sort of, you know, bizarre hidden way for them to take over society. I think it's literally just making sure people actually use them and don't just go, oh, this is cool for 2 seconds.
I still think we need to be worried about the fact that Microsoft Word, almost all current running versions of it, capitalizes Skynet when you type it in.
Yes. Yeah, this is true. In Office, it does do that. Apparently, Alexa's not talking to Skynet anymore. I asked her. Does Alexa know that you're seeing Cortana behind her back?
No, not yet. But I know that if you ask Cortana about some of the other virtual assistants, she tries to play very, you know, professional and is all like, you know, oh, I don't have any comment about that. I'm, you know, I couldn't possibly say anything about Siri. So that's an interesting conversation to be had.
So what does a great chatbot need to have? Because obviously the main aim for anyone making these things, or a virtual assistant, you know, that people need to want to use them.
Yeah, I think so. To create a great chatbot, I think there are two main things that are incredibly important. And I think the first key one is that it can handle errors gracefully. Because I think, you know, the text at an early stages, and a lot of them, you know, they're going to come across queries that they don't understand, that they can't properly respond to just yet, especially ones that are trying to incorporate deep learning, where they learn over time. You know, in these early stages of deployment, you're going to get a lot of sort of, oh, I don't understand the question, can you repeat it? And that's fine for a certain point. But for some applications, you need to handle the errors in different ways. And it's things like, you know, when do you pass it off to, say, a human? If it's like, you know, a service channel or a sales channel or something, you really have to think about how to make sure those errors aren't going to be really frustrating for the user, because, you know, the moment they come across too many of them, they're just going to never use that bot again. And then that's it. The whole research and development into that bot has just been pretty much wasted if that happens to too many of your users. But beyond that, I think a really important part, which we touched on earlier, is that kind of that fun and that personality and that kind of engagement. Because, you know, at this stage, I think using bots for certain services is actually way less efficient. Like, you know, things like, you know, for certain sales channels, I mean, yeah, it's cool being able to, like, type in a Facebook Messenger window to buy stuff. But, like, really, I could just visit the website. Like, I've got my computer there, it's got the internet, or I've got my phone with the internet there if I'm on Messenger. You know, it's actually a less efficient way of doing things. But, you know, talking to a bot's actually kind of cool in a way. It's all very futuristic and, you know, sci-fi, but not really. So I think, yeah, making it fun is what's going to keep people using it at this early stage before it becomes eventually, you know, more efficient and is able to understand that natural language and become a really good way of doing things.
So is that what in particular is perhaps involved in like trying to get the character right when it comes to like tone of voice? I mean, you've already at least mentioned that it needs to be humorous to some degree, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I played up the humor thing because obviously we were just talking about the Easter eggs and the kind of nerdy callbacks and stuff. But I don't necessarily think humor is the sort of be all and end all for writing it.
Context is everything.
Context is everything. Absolutely, and I think it's very important to consider the tone and voice of things, but not necessarily tone of voice, but them as two separate things. So your bot needs a unified voice that sort of the character that it always is, but then the tone of that needs to be adjusted for the situation. And so like a classic example, I always come back to this is like Domino's, the pizza place, has done a lot of stuff with bots. And, you know, people have written before, I've seen loads of things about the fact that, you know, oh, it's crazy, you can order a pizza over, you know, Twitter direct message with Domino's or Facebook Messenger and all that. But I find that the it has a certain voice to it, this particular bot. I can't say I've actually successfully ordered a pizza, by the way. I haven't stooped that low just yet to do it through a messenger window. But I've played around with it, and the voice can be quite frustrating in some ways, because while it has a certain character to it, it kind of keeps that up through like error messages as well, which is incredibly frustrating when it like clearly has gone awry. And then it says to you like, oh, we know you love pizza, but can you start again and go through this laborious 10-minute process? And you're kind of like, why are you taunting me? Yes, I love pizza. Just send it to me. Stop giving me these errors that are really annoying. So yes, context is important. If your bot's going to mess up a lot, it needs to adjust the quirky tone of voice you may have given it to kind of respond to that.
So that's pretty good practice when you're copywriting anyway. You know, consistency of voice, but make the tone appropriate to the context that the reader's in and what the reader's feeling. That's just good copywriting. Although, admittedly, something that a lot of brands just don't seem to be able to get their head around. Like, no, our brand is always funny. It's even funny when it's apologizing. Yeah, good luck with that.
Mm. I think it's also like it's one of these things that's kind of weirdly magnified when it's like a bot, because it you know, like if it's a brand, it's kind of like a web page or something, you know, it's an impersonal interaction, you know. It's kind of like, okay, you might be a bit narked because their sort of apology post about something is a bit, you know, not what you're expecting really from an apology in the case of this fun brand you're discussing. But you know, when it's a bot, it's kind of like a one-to-one chat, kind of feels a little insulting when it's suddenly like the tone's really off. You know, you're just there like, you know, really? Yeah, you know, you're trying to talk to me in this message. It's a direct one-to-one messaging app, and it's just all kinds of wrong from the context. It's hard not to feel a little bit riled up by that, and a bit like, oh, come on, you know.
Making it worse.
Yeah, so tone is so important. I mean, yeah, like you said, David, it's important in everything, but with bots, I feel it kind of gets dialed up to 11 in terms of how much it matters.
Have you seen any bots that have obviously got this right or wrong other than Domino's?
So yeah, I suppose the Domino's would be the one I'd go for the bad in terms of like sort of applying that change in tone. In terms of the good, I think Cortana has a really good tone to it and a really good voice. And I feel Cortana in a way is an interesting case because I feel the team that writes Cortana has been one of the most vocal in interviews discussing how it's been written and how they've come to assemble its responses in a particular way. And you can kind of see the effort they put into to come through. Like I've written a few blogs on this before, but it's just interesting that, you know, Cortana, for instance, has a way of basically if someone insults her, like if, you know, the user is just a bit derogatory or putting down, or even in the case of making some inappropriate comments about Cortana, she'd sort of very gently put them down and kind of just assert that, you know, she's not there to be messed around, she's here to help you and be productive. And it's done in quite a way that's in keeping with the general sort of voice of Cortana, and I suppose Microsoft's brand voice as well, of being, you know, pretty professional, but still sort of maintaining, I suppose, the integrity of that character, which is really interesting to see. And I think they're clearly putting a lot of thought into it and getting good results.
Did a blog post, didn't you, about how that particular, the way that Cortana, for example, handles insults is actually, again, it's a thing that's not just a nice to have, it's something that's actually influences user acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole blog was, I mean, Cortana was kind of brought up a few times as an important case study in this, but the whole thing was mainly about sort of the way that I think a lot of people, you know, when they get their hands on chatbots, they try and break them, and then occasionally they sort of, I don't know, just get a bit weird and like insult them or make some inappropriate comments to them, and it seems to be quite a common thing. But then, you know, the research kind of suggests that if people do that and get away with it and the robot just kind of takes it, I guess, then they lose, the user loses respect for the bot. And then if they don't respect it, they won't use it. So beyond just being like a nice thing for voice and tone, it's also important to keep the user actually putting the bot to use and engaging with it. So it has an interesting ramification there. And the Cortana team's clearly taken that into account. And there's, I'd imagine yielded good results for kind of responding to that.
Yeah, that blog's easy to find on the website because it's the one with the cute robot kind of looking sad. Why would you abuse me?
I will admit that I had Do You Want to Hurt Me playing through my head when I saw that.
You hurt me? I'm just a cute robot.
Yeah.
So. Although we went to a client's office and a robot said to me, they had robot in the in reception because our clients are cool like that, right? And the robot came to me, how can I help you, small human?
So that's why you're going on about Skynet. You've just got it in for the robots now, David.
Yeah.
That kind of shunned you.
It's me versus the singularity.
Last year, our founder, Fiona Campbell-House, spent some time with Wo King, founder of Hi9, and talked about chatbots and virtual assistants like Google Home, Siri, or Alexa, and the opportunities they presented for copywriters. Here is an extract from that interview.
Add to that that voice has become so important. And now, if you, from Google's point of view, is that they're using assistant. Now, they won't say bot. So to them, it because if you look at, if I go one step back again, if a bot's where they are right now is, I come from the generation that games were like text-based games. I don't even remember that.
Yep, absolutely.
You go into the woods, turn north, east, or west.
The Hobbit, yeah.
And you turn north. So you have these different options. Right? And then, you know, you go west, you meet a goblin, what do you do?
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing, right? And so you get these different options, these button choices, these call to actions, and you have to click and have to click and have to click. There's other ones like Kayak in Slack, where I am on Slack and I do / Kayak, did it recently for a flight. And then I put in good hotels in New York next week in natural language. Mm-hmm. Now it searches. So it's not really interacting, it's doing done as a search. So you've either got these call to actions like an old text adventure, or it being used for search. So this is quite early days. Google's taken it to the next step, and Siri, and Amazon with its Alexa, which is like what they're after is, you've got OK Google, but be careful what I say, because all my devices will start working. You've got your OK Google, and they've got Google Home that you're going to actually have it in your home like a device. It looks like a air purifier that you start talking to it and say, OK Google, like you can on your phone, give me a reminder tomorrow morning at 100. But then you'll start asking it questions. But things like ordering pizzas, clothing, all manner of different things that you can buy through that process. And that's the same with bots with F8. So H&M have a bot with Kick that you can actually look at clothing and buy the clothing right through the process. So the voice is going to be like that as well. Now, Google's opening up the developers. Siri's now opening up to developers. And Amazon has already opened up to developers. So you have this app bot stores that will be able to integrate in. Now, that is all going to be voice. That's copy, right?
Yeah.
Now, that is then, I think the copy industry is going to have a bonanza. This is a massive gold rush. If I could buy shares in your Fiona's company, I would. Because it's all going to be copy, and it's going to be an enormous amount of it. But add into that either call to actions, as I was explaining, like the text type of adventure, or what's called machine learning, which is artificial intelligence. So add those two things together, copy is going to be, you know, integrated into all this new gold rush.
Amazing. And so who is writing all that copy at the moment? Is it the developers themselves of the apps?
Developers and someone in the marketing department. They're completely wrong people to be writing copy because they don't know, because I haven't seen the copy industry talk about it. I mean, I only follow a few. I'm a developer. I mean, you know, I follow yourself and a few others, but I haven't seen the industry talk about it. When we're doing our bots, I'm putting it in, which is just nuts, right? I shouldn't have anything to do with this, right? And we have a content person who's now starting to, she's going to be writing it. But again, it's a conversation. It's not a blog post. You're having a conversation. So it's a really different way of having a discussion.
Is it almost like writing a script, you know, and you're writing one side of the script and just imagining what the other person's going to say in the dialogue?
And you have what's called intent. You have recipes and intent. So Facebook has, you can use this artificial intelligence called wit.ai, which is quite basic, but it has things like intent. So whenever you have these Hello World apps in our world, is like the most basic thing you do, is that in bots, they got weather, right? So they do this thing of your intent. So you'll say, what is the weather like tomorrow? So you think that's what the person's going to say or type in the messenger. And then you might put in weather, what's it going to be like tomorrow? So all these different iterations, but it starts to learn of, yes, what you're looking for is someone talking about the weather, right? So yeah, we sort of get that. So the artificial intelligence will sort of understand that and respond. And then it will say, share your location. So you share the location. It says, this is what the weather like in your area. So it could be, what are you looking to buy? Shoes. Where is your location? And then you can have that conversation. I mean, you're much better at this than I am. That conversation. So you have intent and you have these recipes. So if that happens and that happens and then that happens. So they call them recipes. So all the different ingredients is copy. And depending on what the other person responded back. And then you have intent. And intent is what the person is intending to do. And so therefore, that's going to be respond in certain ways as well.
So imagine, because there's a lot of sort of AI and machine learning involved in that, how I imagine it works is if you're developing this bot or, you know, this service for an intelligent assistant for the first time, you need to write all of the conversation. But over time, it learns from what people take it, and can start to assemble the conversation itself?
I mean, the Facebook M, which is their beta project they've had in America, it's done just that. And they say they've done it because it's exactly the route you've just said, is that they've got loads of people and these people are responding and it's learning as it goes along. Now, the reason why they've done that is that it's really hard to get deep learning experts because there's not enough of them, and Google's bought all of them. I mean, Google's just bought a deep learning company in London, best in the world, for 300 million quid just to get the people. I mean, they say they've got between 10 and 40% of every single deep learning expert in the world. There's just not enough of them. So copy's going to be really important. Artificial intelligence, deep learning is coming into this, but there's just not enough people who know enough about it.
So you need the human writers to begin with until you can get that expertise.
So it's a bit like that text, or saying that text adventure seems to be the sort of bit clunkier way of doing it. Yeah. But they're opening up machine learning. Google's opening up machine learning literally next month. So with that, we'll be able to do a lot more exciting things. So yeah, I mean, especially with that, that would be really exciting.
Okay, well, that was some excellent insight from Wo and Fiona. Davey, you reached out on LinkedIn before we recorded this episode, asking people about their chatbot and virtual assistant experiences. Did you find anything? Has anyone actually dared to use anything
yet? It was really interesting because it was another one of those where loads of people noted the comment, liked the comment, so obviously wanted to be kept informed of the conversation. Very few people had anything to say about good or bad examples of AI or chatbots and things. And it's something, I think, where everybody knows it's going to be big. Everybody's interested. Everyone's waiting to see what happens. But very few people are actually putting a toe in the water. But we did get one really interesting comment from Samfire Amps at Electric Dialogue. Now, Sam could hold her breath longer than anybody that I know. And she said, we've had some fun with chat fuel. Main problem seems to be that users rarely stick to the language you expect them to. Lots of semantic variations needed. Oh, and they like to get naughty once they realize it's a bot. So put in some responses for that. So much as George was saying, and I think that's something that I feel is interesting from us as a writer point of view, as well as making the bot sound human. There's potentially a job for us as writers and people who deal with language to think of all the possible ways that you can possibly say a thing, and make, you know, and maybe help to make sure that those things are accounted for.
It's really interesting you say that, actually, because recently one of the clients I was writing for, they were hosting an event all about chatbots and AI and their development, and I went to attend that and cover that for them, and there was a really interesting element around that where they mentioned that the chatbot that this client had deployed and they were kind of testing it and stuff, they mentioned that they'd hired a poet to sort of write all of the things for it. And I found this very interesting, and I was speaking to somebody in charge of it all, and who was researching the UX side of things, and asked him about this corporate poet they had on retainer, and was asking him, like, okay, so, you know, you hired a poet, was that so that, you know, this bot would have like a really strong character and tone of voice and sound really great? And he was like, no, we just needed somebody to like come up with all the possible things anybody could ask and all the possible ways they could ask them. And I found this interesting thing that it seems that a lot of people are estimating that the writing challenge isn't necessarily how the bot's going to be, which is what I thought would be the case, and it's more just trying to anticipate exactly what the user is going to ask. Because, you know, if you release it to the worldwide public, you know, lots of people talk in different ways, and how do you build something that can dissect all those different types of language and types of ways of asking for things and respond to them appropriately? It's a big challenge.
Until you get that really deep learning, which is still some way off. Following on from Sam's comment, I went and thought I'd have a go on ChatFuel, because it claims that you could make a working chatbot in 7 minutes. So I set the stopwatch going, and I had to go. You can't is the short answer. The tutorial on its own takes 10 minutes, and that's even if you just accept the terms and conditions without reading them. But I did have some fun making a Facebook chatbot. Had a little go, and I got it sort of up and running, but not very many questions and answers yet.
I had a go on ChatFuel as well, and it's not, if anyone tries to talk to our Facebook page right now, if it is hooked in, I think it isn't, but it's not going to respond. But I did hook it up to the Radix Facebook page, just had a go. I managed to get it to respond with just, if somebody just asks it anything, it's just like, here, email this. It's just like, just seems the safest thing at the time. It was a bit, I didn't find the tutorial as intuitive as I would have liked. So I was finding it hard to actually figure out what it's kind of a segmentation for, like what the bot says versus what the user's putting in was. So.
But I do have an idea. And that is that, I mean, we have writers here, we have a champion of AI and writing for chatbots, and potentially we have the bones of a chatbot that we can hook up to the Radix Facebook page. So maybe we can create a chatbot with a bit of character, and a bit of consistency, and a bit of something to say, and perhaps the listeners to the podcast would like to contribute some ideas for how they'd like our chatbot to sound, what kind of personality they'd like it to have, what the name might be, and what kind of character we build there in our spare time that we don't have very much of. What do you think? Can we hook something up to the Facebook page for people to play with and then send us their comments?
We can try.
Well, I think that sounds like a fun idea. I do fear for crowdsourced names, though. I imagine it will be called Chatty McChatface or something like that, if history has anything to tell us.
I am confident that our podcast listener has a much higher standard of name generation.
They are a discerning group. I imagine they'll come up with something.
Chatty McChatface. So certainly hit us on Twitter at radix.com or at the brand new podcast email address, which is
podcast@radix-communications.com.
Nice. Hit us up with your suggestions, or make your way over to Facebook and try and make our chatbot less bland and uninteresting. We await your suggestions.
So, George, just before we sort of wrap up, are there any things, like maybe three things you think copywriters need to keep in mind if they're brought in on like a chatbot or a virtual assistant project?
Okay, three things to keep in mind. So number one, as we kind of literally just discussing about, you know, writing for sort of what the questions are going to be asked as well as how the bot's going to respond, that would probably be number one. Keep in mind what questions the bot is going to be asked and try and cover as many of them as possible and in as many different ways to make sure your chatbot can respond properly. Number two would be to handle errors gracefully and come up with ways to do that that's not going to be frustrating to the user. And I suppose number three that kind of links into that a bit is to keep in mind what the user's actually going to get from it, particularly if it is a bit long in the tooth and is not necessarily the most efficient way of engaging with a particular channel or purchasing a product or getting service or whatever your chatbot's doing. Make sure the user's getting something extra from it, like, you know, a bit of fun or an interesting personality to talk to or something like that beyond just the functionality of the bot.
Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. Our next episode is going to be about what's new in B2B blogging. If you've got any questions or comments about that, or indeed this episode, or you want to send chatbot suggestions, feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com, or you could tweet us at radix.com. You'll find a website at radix-communications.com as well. And you can also sign up for a monthly email for latest copywriting tips and insights.
And it's got Emily's hand-drawn cartoons on it. They're amazing.
And if you want to tell us which is your favourite B2B blog, definitely send us a line as well.
Yes, I look forward to reading those.